You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Tuesday, everybody. We've got Arkansas basketball to discuss today. The men getting ready to play Texas Tech in San Francisco on Thursday. The women announcing Kelsey Music as their new head coach yesterday. Ethan Westerman was there to talk with her. We'll play some sound bites from that today on the show. We're going to end the show with Mark Etheridge from D1Baseball.com. He was in Fayetteville on Sunday to watch that game against South Carolina. We'll get his thoughts on the Razorbacks and the SEC. We start with men's basketball, though. The Razorbacks going to play Texas Tech Thursday night, a 9:09 Central Time tip-off. It'll be 7:09 there in the Bay Area. I was at a birthday party for my wife's stepdad yesterday, and I told Nana what time the game was going to start. I said, because she's a big basketball fan, I said, 9:09. She goes, at night? Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a late one.
Yeah, I was about to say, imagine if it was in the morning. I think that would be...
That'd be preferable to me.
Oh, not
over
me.
9:09 at night.
Not me. I'm more of a night owl than... This is right up my alley. And also... There, I think it'll be 7.
So yeah, 7:09.
It'll be fine. It's just y'all back home.
This is assuming that Florida, Maryland doesn't get crazy and go to 2 overtimes or something.
Yeah, well, don't speak this into existence, please. I was about to say, knock on wood as fast as possible.
So 9:09 Central Time on Thursday night. Okay, so you got off the plane from Providence a couple of days ago. You're flying out to San Francisco tonight. There's a media day there tomorrow, an open practice. Team flew out there last night, and they're going to practice today. I'm not sure where they're practicing today, but all eyes are going to be on whether or not Adu Thero practices, because we know he practiced last week in Providence, and he just was not ready to play in the game. How do you think this ends up going for him? Because it seems like he is doing everything he can to get back for them, and I've mentioned this a couple of times on here. You know, with what I've been told about his injury, if he plays, nobody needs to ever say anything bad about Adu Thero again, that, you know, he was milking it or he didn't care or anything. I mean, this guy is fighting through some stuff to try to get back on the basketball court.
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely would be a boost for them. I get it that it's the same, probably the same question arises that people have with Boogie Flame when he returned of like, oh, how does this change how the team looks? But if you have a guy like Adu Thero, who, number one, he played most of the turnaround where they started playing well, he is a guy that I think you can probably just insert back in, and if anything, you're getting athleticism and hustle. If you can get him back, that's awesome. I am curious if the whole practice, you know, was more like throw on your top, take some photos and get some shots up and make Louisville have to think about, or not Louisville, think about
I've Patino. Made that mistake, too, yeah, with Patino.
St. John's, I just associate him with Louisville, and mm-hmm. I don't think I ever won't. But
I still associate him with Kentucky, but move on.
You're just showing your age compared to mine. But is this just like a make St. John's have to think about it thing? Maybe it's a mixture of both. I mean, it can't hurt to have him out there and make Louisville have to think about what if he plays.
St. John's.
This is going to happen every time that I talk about Patino moving forward.
Why don't you say Patino?
Patino, yeah.
Like, don't even associate a team with it. Just say his name.
I'm just gonna say.
Just
his
say
name.
Rick.
Rick. Well, I don't think I can do that. He's Patino in my head, but he's also at Louisville. I guess I'll be old and gray and, you know, in a wheelchair, and I'll be talking about Patino at Louisville because obviously that's where my brain has him for life. But yeah, what was I saying? Adu Thero. Adu Thero. Yeah, you want him back if he can go, but it's, you know, the team's played well enough without him that I'm not, like, too, like, it doesn't kill you if you don't have him. It's just a boost if you do.
I mean, and I don't know that I don't know if he can be back to the Adu Thero pre-injury, but if he could even be, I don't know, a high fraction of that number, that's production for mm-hmm. the Razorbacks. Look, I thought a lot of Adu Thero during the season. I had the AP All-SEC ballot in Arkansas this year, and I put him on my second team All-SEC ballot. And you think about how good the players were in the SEC. You had 4 All-Americans who made the All-SEC AP team. Mm-hmm. And so that's how highly I think of this guy. I think he's been phenomenal all year, and I'm hopeful that he can get back because I've wanted to see all season. And we got to see a kind of a snapshot of it early in conference play, but Jonas Adu wasn't quite back at that point in time. Nelly was still struggling with the wrist. I want to see this team, and I don't know that we'll ever see him at full health with what's going on with Thero and his knee, but I want to see this team with all the pieces together playing in the biggest game, and we may get that chance this week.
Absolutely, and that's the funny thing about it is it's almost the reverse for Arkansas right now with where things are trending from most teams to where you're like, you're like, what can we be at by the end of the year? Because you expect there to be some injuries. You expect there to be stuff. But who do you have at the end of the year? For Arkansas, it's almost like, who can we get back at the end of the year? Can we get to full strength? Which is just crazy because it's the reverse attrition battle. But I think that it is always going to be like a what if all these guys were healthy at the same time. What would they have looked like? But then again, whenever Boogie Flam went down, I think I told somebody that he felt to me like the indispensable player, like the player you got to have. It really hurts to lose him. And then when he went down and they started playing, I was like, oh, well, now it's a due Thero. And clearly they're just proving me wrong that they can step up, guys can step up and play. Like right now, I'm like, I would put it as DJ Wagner. But I'm probably wrong on that. You know, it's just these guys are learning how to play with each other even whenever a guy goes down. And I think it goes back to what Calipari's brought up over and over and over. They just have learned that they have to play together. And that's, at the end of the day, if you have five guys on the court, I mean, he's joked about if he gets down to four guys, he'll run the diamond and go at it. It's like, as long as we're playing together, we're going to go down together, I think is what he says.
So we actually have mail this week in this fun. We should like do a mail segment on this.
You should bring some envelopes just to...
If you want to send us mail, you can email me, mojones@nwadg.com. I will be happy to read your letters on the podcast. Okay, this came from Bill Bruton, and he said, here's a suggestion. Let's have your readers vote on who they think is the most valuable player on this year's basketball team.
Gosh, that's the question that I just said I can't answer. I mean, I guess... It just changes week to week. Like right now, I'd say Jonas Adu. Who would have said that 3 weeks ago? You know, I don't know. It's just this team changes so much.
I'm not going to read the full email because I don't want to do that. But it is a very interesting question. Who is the MVP on this year's basketball team?
John Calipari.
I think that's probably the right answer.
Yeah.
The leadership that he's shown and his ability not to let that early – you know, struggle, lack of success, whatever you want to call it, in SEC play, like pull the team down to the point that they can't get back up, I think is, to me, it's one of the coaching jobs of the year. You know, mm-hmm. Anthony and I were talking a couple of weeks ago about who would you give the SEC Coach of the Year vote to? And I ended up going with Bruce Pearl. I was going back and forth between him and Golden. Those were the two that I thought probably were the most deserving. But I think you can make a case for Calipari. The way – now, you can't totally disregard what happened in the first seven games. And that's why he didn't get SEC Coach of the Year. But if you were like to say, hey, who was the SEC Coach of the Year from February 1st on, I think that he'd have a good argument.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, the regular season, there's no way around it. Sir, if you look at the regular season, what Arkansas did and the talent had, it was a disappointment. But they did get in. And that's all that really matters is how you're playing at the end of the year. And I just want to – I would love to rewind the tape of our podcasts in January just to see, like, what the mood was. And just imagine then talking about what we're talking now. I think I said – I was like, man, they got to figure it out at some point and got to hope they get in because if you're playing – you want to play your best in March. But, I mean, I was saying that with a, you know, tongue-in-cheek as far as, like, yeah, prove to me that this team can do that.
The week that they lost to LSU and Missouri – I was not wanting to come in here and talk about basketball. Yeah. Like I was looking for an excuse to talk about anything else.
Yeah.
But what was going on with this Razorback basketball team?
I mean, why would we want to then? I mean, they were not playing well. They were that loss to
LSU. They were
LSU.
1-6 going to Kentucky.
Yeah, you made the comment in here after the loss to LSU that's the type of game that you can look at the end of your season and say that's what got us left us out of the tournament. And Arkansas was quite frankly probably one more regular season loss away from.
And they lost to South Carolina too, by the way.
Yeah,
I mean they lost to the two worst teams in the SEC.
Yeah. It's that, and which just goes to show how dang good the SEC was to where you had to bring your A game. Like South Carolina at home, I'm just repeating John Calipari here, but they're a ranked team at home. Mm-hmm. I mean, what they did at home was insane, how they took teams down to the wire, and Arkansas just got nuked by them. And then lose at LSU. So that's two of your 10 conference losses. A fifth of your conference losses came to the bottom two teams. And the fact that they survived that and found a way in the tournament, and now it's one of those things of like, well, once you let them in, it's like that was the key, is don't let them in if you're not wanting to see Arkansas go far, because they're playing well right now. If you're John Calipari, I think your thought process is, you know your team is playing really well right now. It's just, do we have enough left in the tank to not run into that dud again? Because the moment they run into a dud, you can't run into a dud at this stage. I guess they might have against St. John's, to be honest, as far as how bad they shot. But thankfully, St. John's was, they didn't know a three-pointer if it hit them right in the face. I mean, they shot worse. So maybe they did run into their dud and just want to grind it out game, but you can't have a performance like they had against South Carolina anymore, or else you're out.
Arkansas's defense plays a factor in what happened.
Oh yeah,
yeah. That word nuke. That's your new word. You used it twice on the phone last night.
Oh yeah. Well,
that's three times now in like the last 17 hours. I've heard you say that word.
I can't think of a better phrase to describe what happened to Arkansas at South Carolina than nuked.
You know what you should do? You should nuke Rick Pitino at Louisville from your memory.
Am I going to have some like crazy brain thing happen where I have to relearn Pitino? Because he's going to be at Louisville like for the rest of... I mean, he's at Louisville in my head right now. That's where he's at this second.
He may be. Who knows?
Yeah, he gets around.
From Cleveland.
He was at a Kentucky game earlier this year. He was in Cleveland for that tournament game. He was in Providence. I mean, at 72 years old, I think I got his age right. Rick Pitino... He still gets around. He's still active. He was a very, very entertaining press conference, too. He resembled everything I felt about Providence, just in general, the experience with the St. John's fans in there, the refs. Oh, my goodness. I don't know if Anthony's talked about the refs, but snippy. Like, he was just snippy and blunt and to the point, and it's something up there that you have to realize. Like, if people talked the way in Arkansas that a lot of people talk up in that area, you would think they were very mad at you, but they're just being normal. They're being so normal that they don't mean anything by it, but it's just snippy and to the point. And those St. John's fans were crazy, and the refs up there were... I've never seen a ref talk to players and coaches the way those refs talked to... I mean, it was just...
It was a very Northeast experience.
Oh, my goodness. And it was like Calipari got snapped back into like
yeah,
a mode. That
back.
He's like, oh, this is... I'm used to this. But like the ref literally... looked at, I mean, was just going to argue one call to try and like, you know, do what you do. And the refs were just like, we've had enough. Like, stop it. Like, yelled at him. And then yelled at Tyler Ulis. Tyler Ulis got chewed out by a ref. I mean, I've not seen refs chew out coaches like I saw on Saturday.
And then if you're watching on TV, you had Steve Lapis on the call, who was Northeast basketball's number one fan.
Yeah, we were in a very, Calipari was right at home. The rest of us were shell-shocked.
Where on earth are we right now?
Yeah, no, it's very snippy up there. I mean, and those St. John's fans were like, I don't want to say they like jeered. They weren't like upset.
They're New York fans.
Yeah.
It's a totally different, it's a different environment that they exist in. I'm not going to say they exist in a totally different environment than we do here.
Yeah, I think the difference is, you know, at Arkansas game or in the South, you hear booing. It's just a chorus of boos. There, I'm hearing distinctive words said, just snippy. Like, I'm hearing comments by the fans way louder than I ever hear anywhere else. And it's just like, I know the refs are hearing this too. That was a crazy environment, though. I mean, once those St. John's fans got into it, it was... You know, I was like, is Arkansas going to hold on? Because it's a pretty daunting, environment they were in. But I think Arkansas also has a couple guys from that area. I mean, DJ Wagner's from Jersey, right? I'm losing track. There's a couple others.
Boogie's from New York.
Yeah, Boogie. I think that they were kind of felt like this is normal.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Back in it.
That's my Providence experience of snippiness. We all got here because I was saying... Talking about Pitino.
I don't even know how we got here. Yeah. So were RJ Lewis. Lewis had to delete his Instagram account because of the messages that he was getting over people who were upset with his play in the tournament. Speaking of Northeast, John Calipari yesterday was on the Dan Patrick Show. Dan Patrick originates out of Connecticut. not too far actually from Rhode Island. In fact, I think he may have been doing his show yesterday. No, I'm seeing the video now. He was in Connecticut. He's got two studios. He's got one in Connecticut and he's got one in Maine that he goes to from time to time. So this was John Calipari on the Dan Patrick Show talking about Arkansas being an underdog and embracing the underdog role of the tournament.
An underdog?
Yes. Yeah, I'm fine with that. Like, look, most of my career was shouldn't, wouldn't, can't, won't. I mean, we've been the underdog. You remember UMass. You came up and did some games. You went on the court, shot air balls, and, you know, some of the stuff there. And the Memphis, the same thing. And, you know, we had a pretty good run at Kentucky. And there was that 8-9 year period where, yeah, we were the one. But, you know, most of my career, I've been that. And so I'm fine in that role. I'm comfortable in the role. I'm just trying to make sure my team is comfortable in that role.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, are you telling them it's nobody believed in us against the world? No, none of that.
No, I'm just saying we're the underdog.
Okay.
And every time they play in those kind of games, they play well. I think, look, we're at that point in the year. The whole thing is, how do I get them to have that mindset that we had against St. John's? Because, look, there's two things happened. We went 2-for-19 from the three and gave up 28 offensive rebounds, but still won. We played to win. Don't matter what happens. Doesn't matter they got a rebound. Just keep playing. And we keep them in that attitude and that mindset. It doesn't mean you're going to win, but it gives you a good chance to win.
I feel like Calipari has gone back to his roots, and he is really loving being, like he says, in that underdog role. He's back to the UMass Cal, the guy who was building UMass from nothing into a program that everybody had to take seriously. And I'm not saying Arkansas was nothing when he came in, because that's not the case. But it's not Kentucky. It's not the glitz and glamour and everything that he's experienced over the last 15, 20 years when he was, you know, the it coach and the coach with all the eyes on him. He still is that to a certain extent, but now he's kind of, you know, he's kind of brought himself back down to earth a little bit, I think, from that high horse that he was on at Kentucky, and I think he's loving it. I think it's bringing out the best version of himself as a coach.
I mean, he's gone from his team was being hunted, and now he gets to be the hunter, and I think that he loves that. I think that he's going out there, and he loves the fact that everybody's counting him out. And, you know, what's Arkansas's record this year? Well, maybe not even record, but just how they've against whenever they're like a 5-to-10-point dog. Like, they just play so – it's like they don't care. And it's
– Are you saying he's Sam Pittman?
I'm saying he's Sam Pittman. Sam Pittman will cover. This guy sometimes – I mean, he sometimes wins outright. I mean, think about when they went to Kentucky, what
yeah.
type of underdog they were against Kansas, against St. John's they were, I think – 4-to-5 points.
They were an underdog at Texas.
I'm sure they were at Vanderbilt. It's just they've performed well in that role, and I think that he just, more than anything, is liking getting to be back in that hunter mode, to where it's like, how do we get these guys to come and play against a team that has had a better season than us, that is going to be favored against us, and that people are frankly kind of ruling his team out. He loves that. I think that it's one of those things that's funny now, because Arkansas is going to continue. I think every game that they win in this tournament, they will likely be an underdog. I mean, they're the lowest seed. I just don't see them being favored in any game against any theoretical team. So I'm interested to see how long it takes people to pick up. I mean, maybe they get bounced this next game. Maybe they don't. But this is a team that has a 10 seed by its name, but has the talent of a lot of teams that were higher seeded. It's fine. They're going to be an underdog, but they just feel to me like, if you look at the team that's played since February to now, this is not a 10 seed. This is a team that got in that, you know, that was the main thing, is just get in.
Well, Dayton, get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. There you can read coverage of tonight's baseball game between Arkansas and Missouri State. I spoke to Joey Hawkins, the Missouri State coach, yesterday. I got some thoughts from him on taking over for Keith Gutton, also his thoughts on tonight's game. Also spoke to Nate Thompson yesterday, Arkansas's hitting coach, about this great start Arkansas is off to in baseball, especially their lineup. You can read all that right now at wholehogsports.com. Of course, we're going to talk with Mark Etheridge from D1 Baseball a little bit later in the show. You can find our podcast on Apple by searching Whole Hog Sports. You can find a video version on YouTube. Search Whole Hog Sports there, and we post the video version each day to our social media pages on Twitter and Facebook with the username Whole Hog Sports. When we come back, Kelsey Musick was announced as Arkansas's, or introduced as Arkansas's new head coach for women's basketball yesterday. We'll have some sound bites from that. We'll have Ethan's thoughts on it, but first, word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. Committed, professional, versatile. They've been serving their community since 1971. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Kelsey Musick announced as Arkansas's new women's basketball coach, the 10th women's basketball coach in Arkansas history yesterday. Hunter Juracek was there, and this is what he had to say about the hire.
She first came on my radar screen back in November of this season when she brought her Oral Roberts team here to Bud Walton Arena. And I watched how she coached with incredible energy and an incredible passion. And her student athletes played the same way. And they walked out of here, I think they won by 18 to 20 points, and the game was really never close after the first quarter. Then she went on to Missouri back in December and beat a Missouri team at Missouri. In fact, I believe her two SEC wins would have put her 14th or 15th place in the SEC this year with those two wins. She went on to have a 24-8 record this season. Five of those eight losses are teams that are currently playing still in the NCAA women's basketball tournament. They finished second in the Summit League regular season. They lost in the conference championship to 24th-ranked South Dakota State University, who's still playing. She led Oral Roberts to back-to-back 20-win seasons for the first time in 15 years.
Hunter Juracek on Kelsey Musick, obviously coming over from ORU. Ethan, you were there in November when ORU beat Arkansas 94-73. I know you remember the game very well, and I'm sure you've gone back and looked at it in the last few days. What was it about that night that you think made her stand out and her team?
Well, first of all, I do remember that was a game. Whenever you're covering a team that's really struggling like this, I'm always looking over to that section that Hunter Juracek might be sitting on. I look, I'm like, is he here tonight? Because this was a team that going into it, I said they could beat Arkansas because they can score. And I don't know if at that point I was like, Arkansas, probably their defense is not very good, so they might have a hard time. And whenever I came in there and I saw Hunter Juracek sitting over there, I was like, all right, I'm gonna see what his body language is throughout this game. And by the fourth quarter, I remember he just did not look well as far as just what he was seeing. I mean, it was very stern, like, this is serious. But I do remember, like, I vividly remember thinking about Oral Roberts, just the energy and stuff that they played with over on their side. I mean, there was a point in the fourth quarter they could not get stopped. If they wanted a bucket, they were getting it. And they were just the energy over there that Kelsey Musick had. I do remember thinking, this is a good look for her right now. And she's a coach that I covered, like, her, I think, fourth or fifth game probably as the coach at Oral Roberts. They came in here 2 years ago and got beat pretty bad, and she joked afterward yesterday. I mentioned that to her, and she said, we weren't very good then, were we? And I was like, nope, not disagreeing there. But, yeah, she's come into to Bud Walton several times, and I've seen her teams get so much better. And this past year's team, I mean, they were a second place team in a mid-major conference, so it doesn't stand out. But I think you have to take into account like just what the growth process was to get to where they were this past year. And you got to think, well, what happens if she gets another year there? They have three underclassmen, two that I remember had really good games. I say underclassmen. They aren't seniors next year. They had two juniors and one sophomore that really played well against Arkansas. And it makes me wonder, like, if I saw them score 20 points apiece and then the other one 18 – maybe they could play in the SEC. So I'm just curious to see how this works. I think that more than anything, it was just it's a new breath of air. It's a fresh breath of air for the program. And she's hungry and driven. You can tell that.
Relatively young for a head coach, 45, five-year contract. She's not from nearby, but she's not from too far away either. Canton, mm-hmm. Oklahoma is her hometown. If you don't know where that is, I looked it up. It's about an hour and a half past Stillwater to the west, so like northwest Oklahoma, not quite the panhandle, but about 4.5-5 hours away from Fayetteville. So she's it's home region for her. She's going to know a lot of the areas where Arkansas needs to recruit. Tulsa, I'm sure, that's always been a place where when men's basketball's had success, they've had some good Tulsa area players in the past. Clint McDaniels, the first one I think of. But, so 5 years, that's her contract. She had a good Division II career, took him to a Division II national championship in 2019. Juracek spoke yesterday. He used words and terms, Ethan, like hidden gem and rising star, and we'll play this soundbite from him. And he also talked about how he has to be, and I would assume the fan base, has to be patient with her as she builds this program.
To the University of Arkansas, the leader women's basketball program, and I believe we have found a hidden gem and a rising star, and I look forward to working alongside her to build a nationally competitive women's basketball program, because this is not going to happen overnight. But I promise you, under Coach Musick's leadership, special days are ahead for our women's basketball program.
So, Hunter Juracek on Kelsey Musick there. We'll hear from Musick here in just a moment. So you mentioned the scoring, the offense. That's what she's known for. I think they were eighth nationally in mm-hmm. scoring this year. Is that right?
Top 20 all 3 years there.
And at Division II level, that's what they were known for as well. As we read up on her, she's a Hall of Honor for a Division II program mm-hmm. in Oklahoma. She wasn't the first candidate. I think we all know that. And I think Arkansas went after Molly Miller at Grand Canyon. It didn't work out. She's going to Arizona State. It's a unique situation for her where she gets to stay in Phoenix and go from kind of a school that's a little bit of an afterthought there to a school that's very prevalent, at least in the college scene, coaching in a pro market. That's much different than if you're coaching here. I don't think that the search was, and you talked to Juracek about this. I want to get your thoughts. I don't think it was as helter-skelter as some people think it was. I think that there were people who he talked to who just, I don't want to take that type of risk at this point in my career. But I don't think that things were quite as bad maybe as they've been made out to be either.
Yeah, I think that what he told us, there was pretty much four candidates that there were formal conversations, like really – really, this is serious, and obviously Kelsey Musick was one. I would assume Molly Miller was one, and then who the other two are, we don't know. Maybe we'll find out in the coming days. But
we've heard names, but we don't want to say them out loud.
Exactly, and it's just whenever you have, whenever you get to actually meet her, I can see why the energy and stuff stands out, and how she could sell what she's done, because she's really taken over. This is not new to her, to take over a bad situation. I think that's probably
ORU was a bad situation.
And her first year at the D2 at Southwestern Oklahoma State, they won three games, 3-24. And then she had them 10 years later in the D2 national championship. So it's like, this doesn't intimidate her, I don't think, to take over a mess, quite frankly. It might, and it's obviously a bigger stage, a bigger level, but this is like, I can tell what she likes to do. And I think that they just wanted to get somebody who really did embrace that challenge. Like, they want to come in and fix this. And also, there's got to be that understanding, and I think this is the same thing that Mike Nabors got granted to him, that he took over a bad situation, where there's an understanding that year one is going to be foundation laying. There's no expectations for next year other than to probably just build that foundation. But she's got some time, and she can probably build this the way she wants to.
Hunter Yurecek talked about how the new revenue share he thinks could help the women's basketball team at Arkansas. I don't think it's lost on anyone the fact that John Tyson attended this opening press conference. Whether that means anything, I don't know. But obviously, he's been a force in what's happening with men's basketball. Does he take an interest in women's basketball? It remains to be seen. But that was certainly interesting that he was there yesterday.
Yeah, it was actually he didn't come to the news conference, but he was at the men's practice across the street, mm-hmm. and they went and introduced her. She had not actually met John Calipari yet, just texted. Okay. So she went over there and met him and met John Tyson.
So he was at the men's practice. Yeah, and that's good clarification. Nolan, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Nolan Richardson was over there too. And so she got to meet all three of them, which I'm sure that was just like bang.
They conveniently left that out in the social media post that they put of her meeting all of these legends. So you ask her, what are her teams known for? And this is what she had to say.
Well, definitely a passion, a whole lot of energy and effort. But I run a high-octane offense, so the one other thing that we love to do is put points on the board. We're not going to play slow. We're going to play fast. We're going to get up and down and force the issue on the offensive end, and then you got to get back and you got to guard. But definitely that energy, that level of passion, and that effort, and to perform at the highest level, that's extremely important. But I'm definitely known for my high-octane offense, and that'll definitely be taking place here.
She's confident, and you could hear that in her responses throughout this press conference. If you haven't watched it, I would encourage you to do so. If you go to our Whole Hog Sports YouTube page, it's there. And speaking of the confidence, Ethan also asked her about her confidence. And, you know, she said that basically, and you'll hear this in the clip, that it comes from her experience building programs. You know, some coaches are good about stepping into situations where things are already really good for them. And then some coaches really enjoy that challenge of taking something from almost nothing and building it into something. Anyway, this is what she had to say about her confidence.
I think the fact that I've been able to be successful building a program, because that's not easy. Some people can come in where it's already built. But when you're trying to build something, you're starting over, laying a foundation, that's definitely not an easy task. But I'm up for that challenge. But I think the support that we have from our administration, from Hunter, from everyone here on campus, but especially the support from the fans is going to be important as well. So I'm up for the challenge. But I think the confidence comes from the fact that I've been doing it. That's all I've done since I finished college. I've just been in college sports. So I think experience can be measured. It's not always maybe in the length of time, but you can have quality experiences measured in different ways. And I think that I have the quality experience to be able to make that jump. And like I said, it's going to involve some hard work, but I'm ready for the challenge.
I don't know how she'll do, Ethan, as a coach, but I think that, you know, again, she came off during the press conference yesterday very confident, very articulate, with a real vision about what this program could look like.
Yeah, I think that I always say win the press conference. It's a cliche. I think she did, as far as she gave off that confidence that you want a new leader to have. And I was curious how she'd be, because this is, her first, big job. It's like, Oral Roberts, obviously a D1 team, but this was like, how many press conferences did they have that people were eyes glued on it? And I thought she did a really good job oozing that confidence yesterday. I think that she's one of those hires that's not flashy at all. It reminds me a little bit of maybe probably how it felt with Courtney Dyfel when she got hired with softball here, as far as like what was like the appeal to it. But it's a coach that once you actually get to meet and talk to them, I was sitting there and I was like, I can see why people would want to play for you. Like, just talking to her one-on-one afterward, I was like, you are a coach that I think players would love, like, because you can tell that she's a people person, but also you can very much, since she's competitive and she'll hold people accountable most likely. That's just the sense that I got, that they're going to be coached hard, but she will care about them. And I think that that's the type of coach that, whenever I was telling you qualities last week or whenever that was, that looking for in the new coach, I think she checks a lot of the boxes. I know 45 isn't as young as a lot of candidates out there, but whenever you meet and talk to her, she feels younger to me. Mm. I don't know, but she did a good job yesterday. There's also this is a random, but you talked about Canton, Oklahoma. She mentioned yesterday that Sam Pittman moved there for like 1 year or something in high school, and they were in the same town and know some of the same people, and then he moved back to somewhere else. But anyway, that's just a random fun fact.
That's interesting. Two more quick thoughts. They didn't make an NCAA tournament. South Dakota State's a really good women's basketball program, like a really good mid-major basketball program. in that same league that ORU was competing in. You think about the coaches right now that are big names in women's basketball. Kim Caldwell, Division II start at Glenville State, spent a year at Marshall, ends up getting to Tennessee. Molly Miller, again, the big name in the coaching cycle this year, made her name up at Drury in Springfield and then spends a few years at Grand Canyon. So not saying that that'll be done here at Arkansas, but there is a little bit of a pathway that we're seeing right now where Division II coaches are going into the D1 level and getting big jobs.
Yeah. And I've said for a while, I think some of the best coaches in the world are at those small levels. Yeah. They just aren't known.
I think if you can coach, you can coach at any level. Now, resources and players and all of that plays a factor in whether or not you're going to be successful at the bigger levels. But if you can coach, you can coach. And I'm a big believer in that. Ethan, appreciate you being here. We'll talk to Ethan whenever he gets out to San Francisco for the NCAA tournament later this week. When we come back, we'll have Mark Etheridge from D1Baseball.com. But first, another word from our sponsors.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. Arkansas baseball back in action tonight. It's going to be a 6 o'clock first pitch over at Baum Walker Stadium. Razorbacks taking on Missouri State. The Bears 10-12 overall, but they are 3-0 in the Missouri Valley Conference. Swept Bradley over the weekend up at Hammonds Field in Springfield. This will be the first of two matchups between Arkansas and Missouri State this year. Razorbacks will go up there on April 29th, Arkansas on a 7-game overall win streak. They've won 5 in a row in SEC play. And Mark Etheridge of D1Baseball.com was there on Sunday when Arkansas defeated South Carolina 11-4. He joins us now. Mark, hope your trip home went well.
It did. Man, it was quite a trip. You know, you mentioned the Arkansas game that I saw on Sunday. That was the finale of 10 games in 10 days and 10 venues. And let me tell you, I had a lot of windshield time and a lot of press box meals, and I am so happy to be home, and so is my dietitian and my chiropractor and everyone else, because it was a great trip, but 10 days is a lot.
So you got to see Arkansas do what it's been doing this year, which is have this just mega inning that puts teams away. Sometimes it's in the first inning, sometimes it's in the fourth. On Sunday, it was in the eighth. What were your thoughts on seeing this Arkansas lineup in person?
Well, I'd seen them on video, and the impression I had going in was that it's just a lot of power hitting guys, free swingers, hitting for a lot of power. But that's not really what I saw in person. I saw a lot more patient approach. I saw guys really digging in with two strikes, shortening up, making pitchers work. And that to me was even more impressive because, you knew about the power, but you didn't really know how that was transpiring. It's a difficult lineup to pitch to. And certainly there's even depth pieces, that I didn't see. So I'm really impressed with the offense and frankly, a bit surprised. You know, heading into the season, we wondered what the offense was going to look like. And we're really bullish on the mound. And while the pitching has been okay, it hasn't been superb, while the offense has. And it's really been I really think Arkansas's offense, at least from my standpoint, matches up with the best in the conference, like the Georgias and the Tennessee. The LSU can really swing it. I feel like Arkansas's his offense stacks up well.
Yeah, you look at the numbers. I looked up some national stats last night. Arkansas 7th right now nationally in runs per game at 9.6. And then some of these numbers, Mark, are just very unlike what we've seen from Arkansas. Even when Arkansas's had really good lineups, they haven't been elite nationally. I mean, here's some. 605 slugging, that's third in the country. 1050 OPS, that's third. 56 home runs, that's third. An OBP 445, that's sixth. Batting average is eighth at 332. They're top 10 in RBI, they're top 10 in hits. And what we saw over the weekend that really stood out to me is that we've talked about these top six in the order. Arkansas's top six hitters in the order are batting 356 or better. We saw the bottom third of the order come through over the weekend, 14 for 34 from the 7-8-9 hitters. And, you know, there's that may be South Carolina pitching, I don't know. But if they can get that type of production at the bottom of the order with what those top six have been doing, boy, that's going to make them really hard to beat.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, just lengthening that lineup is big, because I really do feel like with the way that the top of the line and top in the middle of the lineup are just so difficult to pitch to right now, not only are they getting production, but they're driving up pitch counts, getting into those, you know, the back into the staff arms, and you want as many at bats as you can against those guys versus, you know, a team's top pitchers. So that's the part for me that was surprising, just how effective they were at spoiling pitches. And I think that's going to play well as this season goes on, and against Vandy, who can really pitch it. I saw them last Thursday, and they've got, you know, that's going to be a great test for this Arkansas lineup.
I want to ask you more about Vanderbilt in 1 second. One more thought on Arkansas. I feel like hitting is over, and you touched on pitching a second ago. There's two. You look at the pitching numbers. Arkansas's fifth nationally right now in WHIP at 116. Yeah. I believe, let me pull it up here, they're 11th nationally. Yes, an ERA of a 3.43. Those are not bad numbers. College baseball's a lot higher scoring now. I think we all know that. There's two things I think that are overshadowing Arkansas pitching. Number one is the offense, which we've talked about. Number two is just how dadgum good they were last year on the mound, and especially with Hagan Smith and the type of numbers that he was putting up, and you know, how that just affected everything with their pitching staff. Number one, he gave them length on Friday nights. They didn't have to use a lot of guys. They were able to save them for Saturday, Sunday, even their Tuesday games. It's not a bad pitching staff. It's just, I feel like right now maybe an incomplete pitching staff, because there's some pitchers who are hurt who are going to be back in the fold, and they got to figure out what's going on with their rotation, in particular Gackle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's all about expectations, right? And heading into the year, and I was a big part of this, right? We created this, hey, this is going to be the best rotation in the country, arguably the best pitching staff, and it hasn't been. It doesn't mean that, you know, that it struggled. It's just we expected so much. And it was almost impossible to live up to that anyway. You mentioned Gackle. I really wonder if it's time to move him back to the bullpen, at least for a few weeks, where he was so successful last year, and just see, right? Does this flip the switch? And then you have an option of maybe you try him again in the rotation, or you leave him where he is. And he's just too good an arm to be giving you as little as he is right now. Because there's just so much more in there. And then when Gage Wood comes back, man, I mean, that could be the perfect time to do some experimentation as he builds his way back up. Maybe, you know, you start him and just piggyback he and Gackle, something like that, to kind of just switch it up a little bit.
You mentioned something the other day, you know, Chase Burns, he kind of went through this at Tennessee where he'd been a good reliever, then they put him in the starting rotation, didn't go well. They put him back in the bullpen, and that's what turned Tennessee's season around.
Yeah, sure did. And, you know, he's just so talented. And so much is expected of him because of that enormous talent. And Arkansas just, it's not that they have to have him, but when you have a guy that talented, you want to maximize it or at least get more out of it, you know, based on how what he's capable of. Yeah, I think the other part of this is, you know, what about Fisher? What about Jimenez? Those guys can really, you know, they give you some options to come in and you know, where you don't have to have Gackle. You know, a lot of teams are searching for three weekend guys. Arkansas, they've got some options. They can plug some people in. So, you know, it's a luxury, and that's going to allow them to continue to persevere until some of the guys get rolling like you want them to be.
Vanderbilt plays Eastern Kentucky tonight over at Hawkins Field in Nashville. Commodores are 19-5 overall. They're 4-2 in the SEC. They lost their first SEC series to Auburn. Then they went to, A&M came to Nashville last week, and Vanderbilt swept Texas A&M. One thing that stands out to me, Vanderbilt undefeated at home this year, and of course we've seen just how good they play on that turf. It's such a unique experience playing them there in Nashville. What this Vanderbilt team, is it your typical Tim Corbin team? Does it look different?
I think in a way it is. They're not overly physical. They do have some physicality, but they made some changes on their coaching staff this year. So there's some nuances that they're a little bit different. I think they, it felt like for me last year they had like 6 second basemen in the lineup, and they all should be hitting 2-hole, right? And I felt like this year there's more versatility, more flexibility. Brody Johnston is a kid to watch. He's a freshman. He was injured early in the year, so his numbers aren't what they could be, but he's a future star. I mean, he's the next one at Vandy, so keep an eye on him. One interesting thing to me is the guy I saw Thursday night, his name's Connor Fennell. He's a transfer from Dayton. Mm-hmm. He'd only pitched 5 2/3 innings all year. They roll him out there to start against the preseason number one team at A&M. His fastball is like 86 to 88, and he's got a really good change that's around 80. And then he's got this really slow slider that's like 70 to 72 miles an hour. And he's getting whiff after whiff. He struck out 7 of the batters first time through the lineup, 7 out of 9. And when you're doing that with the low 70s, you just don't see that. So it's going to be really fascinating, to see this really talented, productive Arkansas lineup when they face a guy like this that you just don't see. Maybe you see it with some of the lower teams in the sport, got kind of out of necessity. But this is Vanderbilt, man. They've got other options, and they chose him, and he was good. And that to me is, it's fun to watch those guys just because they're, the novelty of it. But what's that going to look like week after week after people have seen him? But I really feel like that's one of the fun parts of this weekend series.
How do you think Arkansas and Vanderbilt match up against each other? Like what are some of the keys to watch in this series this weekend?
I would say Arkansas has so much more power. They need to use that to their advantage. I mean, that ballpark, it's cozy. It's, there's no foul territory. Mm-hmm. The big green monster in left field. And depending on the weather, it can play small or it can play big, depending on the conditions. But that's Arkansas's advantage. Just that offense is so much better. I think pitching-wise, Vanderbilt matches up pretty well. I do think that they've got enough to give Arkansas problems. The question is, Arkansas on the mound, are the Hogs able to just pound the zone and not give Vandy anything cheap? Because if you make them earn it, I feel like you got a pretty good chance on them because they're just not as physical.
Arkansas, of course, playing really good defensively, and I always feel like that's really important mm-hmm. against Vanderbilt with some of the things they do, putting runners in motion, bunting. Yeah. They're one of the best teams at moving base runners in the SEC. So you mentioned A&M, 0-6 now in the SEC. Like, what do you think has gone wrong there this year?
Well, to start with, they were not as good as we made them out to be in the preseason. They were the quote super team, mm-hmm. and I think we made them out to be more than they were. So they've got these high expectations. It's a new coach who was an assistant last year, and now he's in the big chair, and it's a different role. It's a different job, and it's been a lot to manage. I would say the other part of this is the team that we evaluated heading into the season is not this team, okay? Without Gavin Grahovic, without Caden Sorrell, they're getting nothing out of the catcher position. They've got really 3 spots in the lineup that are almost automatic outs right now. And when you think about how good this lineup was supposed to be, we thought this would be this team would do what Georgia's doing, mm-hmm. what Tennessee's doing, and frankly, what Arkansas's doing. And they're not. And because with LaViolette in the middle of the lineup, and he's had his moments, but you don't have to pitch to him. You can make him chase. And I feel like that's, I mean, that's really where I see it. It's offensively. Pitching wise, they've been fine, better than fine in their starting role. The bullpen's been good enough. Defensively, they've been a train wreck. I mean, it's just there's so many things that you can point to, but still there's enough talent that if they get some of these guys to figure it out offensively, they're going to be so dangerous, and they could beat anybody.
I know Florida's played two really good teams in the SEC. They started with Tennessee up there, mm-hmm. and then Georgia came to their ballpark, but they're 0-6 in the SEC, and this is another team kind of like A&M, that there were great expectations for this team. You know, just looking at the stats, the thing that jumps out to me about Florida was that I think a lot of people thought that this was going to be a pretty good pitching staff for them this year, and you look at their numbers, and again, they're playing elite offensive teams. I understand that, but you know, like at Georgia over the weekend, they lost 8-7, 17-2, 15-4 in seven innings. Those are, I would think for Florida, those are pretty alarming numbers that they're putting up on the mound.
Yeah, it has to be. I mean, last weekend they played without Liam Peterson, their best pitcher, without Pierce Coppola, their second best pitcher. So you take the first two out of anybody mm-hmm. against Georgia and you're going to have trouble. However, those two weren't going to pitch every inning last weekend. It's a three-game set. So those other guys who had opportunities just didn't get it done. And Aiden King, who's one of the best freshman pitchers in the country, got moved into a Friday role and kind of got rocked around a little bit for the first time this year. I do think that if they get Peterson back, which the hope is he will return this week, if they get Coppola back, which the hope is he will return sometime in the next month, and then you've got King, who's really, I mean, as I said before, the sky's the limit. He's the next great Florida pitcher. Mm-hmm. That would give you three starters that would match up with anybody. Now, the question is, what do they have behind that? You know, the bullpen took their lumps this weekend as well. So I do think of the 0-6 teams, Florida has a path to kind of crawl back into this, get into the postseason, and especially if they'd be playing well, if they did that it would be like last year. They'd be a team you would not want to face in your regional.
Is Justin LeBron the best player in the SEC right now?
Well, he's sure fun to watch. Man, he's a highlight reel at shortstop. He's about 180 pounds, and the ball just trampolines off his bat. I don't know how he gets that much bat speed with out of that wiry frame, but man, he's hit what, 12, 13 home runs. He's got almost 50 ribbies. I mean, he looks at home on any field out there. And most of the time, I mean, he looks like a big leaguer playing against college kids. Mm-hmm. And I think in a couple, you know, he's just a sophomore. He's not even draft eligible yet. But yeah, I'm with you. I don't know that there's a better one. There may be a better hitter. There may be a better fielder. But I don't know that there's a combo player who can do the things he can do.
Well, I made a comment the other day. I think Vahiva Aloy is playing at an All-America level. You think about the defensive play that he made Saturday, and he's hitting really well. And maybe his biggest competition to be an All-American, at least a first team, and I know there's others out there too, but it might be his biggest competition to be first team All-SEC and LeBron.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, two of the best shortstops in the country. Merrick Houston at Wake Forest is really good as well. Those mm-hmm. would be the top three in my book. I really feel like that with what Aloy's been able to do this year, I mean, he showed signs last year, right? But it just, the consistency wasn't there. And then the high-end stuff, I mean, just the games where he's having, you know, three hits and two of them are extra base hits. Those kind of things that they weren't as frequent last year. He's really elevated and become one of the breakout stars in the conference.
Get you out of here on this. Dave Van Horn won his 900th game at Arkansas last week, just the fourth SEC coach to do that in terms of 900 wins at the same SEC program. Of course, Ron Polk at Mississippi State, and the other three are active, Van Horn, Bianco, and Tim Corbin. Why do you think let me preface it with this too. Arkansas yesterday in the rankings, it's their 115th consecutive week that they're in the top 25. And mm-hmm. I think about 90 of those, they've been in the top 10, and about most of those have been in the top five, Mark. What have you seen over the last 7-8 years that Van Horn's always had a really solid program, but what's made it take a step forward to where they're one of the teams that you watch now every year?
They are relentless at player acquisition. They get good players and then they develop them. And in order to do that, you need to have something good to sell, which obviously Arkansas has a great program, great ballpark, great fan base, and a winning tradition. But then maintaining that with the consistency that, of having that process in place, you know exactly what Arkansas is going to look like. They're going to be fundamentally sound. They're going to take care of the baseball. They're going to have a great pitching staff, throw strikes. And typically they're going to have an offense that battles. And that's what they continue to do year after year. And then Dave's been able to pull the right cards out occasionally, right? He's a really good in-game coach, and because of that, he's seen enough baseball to know what works and what doesn't. And at this point, you have to put him up at the top of the best coaches in the SEC, and therefore the best coaches in the country.
Mark, appreciate your time. It was good seeing you on Sunday, and hopefully we'll see you a little bit down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Enjoyed it, man.
All right, thank you. Mark Etheridge from D1Baseball.com. We appreciate you all being with us today on our podcast. We'll be back with another one tomorrow. We'll talk to Anthony and Ethan from San Francisco, where Arkansas is getting ready to play Texas Tech at the NCAA tournament. Hope we see you at our website, WholeHogSports.com. Have a great day, everybody.